the last 10 years in agriculture are, the most profitable we've seen since the Gilded Age of agriculture in the early 1900s. It's really remarkable. And so, but even with that, the challenges are still there, are they not? I mean, it's just a high-stakes game, a high-stakes, very important and critical game to the future of our world that you, as individual, family businesses, entrepreneurial and creative in nature, are putting thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars on the line each year in a very uncertain environment. It really speaks to the importance, I think, of associations like the National Sorghum Producers, where individuals can come together and join forces to promote their interests. And man, just the program this morning, how exciting is it? And what a great job the National Sorghum Producers, the team Tim has put together, is doing with the checkoff. Just the program this morning with Carlos and Garth and Chris talking about the CARB, I think we can all see what a remarkable job that this association is doing to advance the interests of sorghum producers as you all seek to do the good work of meeting the needs of this world into the future. So just some positive comments to start. I really want to take just a few minutes to do a few things. Sarah really took all of my material in providing a very, very excellent presentation of what's going on in Washington, D.C. and the factors that are going to influence the Farm Bill and what we can expect and look for over the course of the next year or year and a half or 2 years or even possibly drawn out beyond that. But so I really just want to kind of recapture what and try and phrase what Sarah had put together in three basic issues that are going to define the Farm Bill debate. And then I want to make just three recommendations to you as we go through. So first, the issues. Sarah spent some time on the budget, and I just want to reemphasize what a terrible situation we're in as a nation and how this is going to influence every area of the government and put immense pressure on every area of the government to reduce spending, agriculture included. She had mentioned our deficit last year was $1.2 trillion. This year it's expected to be $1.6 trillion. Next year it's supposed to go down to $1.4 trillion. These are incredible numbers, really. We as a nation the last couple of years have been taking in revenue about $2.1 trillion. We've been spending, therefore, in the $3.5 to $3.7 trillion range, thus leaving us with this $1.4, $1.6 trillion deficit. That's deep. I mean, how many of y'all would feel comfortable if that were the situation on your farm? How many of your bankers would feel comfortable if that was the situation on your farm? We have a serious problem that needs to be addressed. Now, happily, the good news from an agricultural perspective, we have a great story to tell in this regard. We are the only area of the federal budget, we're in the only area of federal investment that has actually reduced its expenditures over the last 10 years. If you look at what the Farm Bill spent over the last 5 years, 2007 through 2011, the most recent, it's actually 28% below in nominal dollars what we spent the 5 years before that, and it's 34% below what we spent the 5 years before that. So we have, in nominal dollars, reduced spending on the farm programs. That's federal farm programs and crop insurance combined. That's a remarkable story. That's a unique story. As I said, we are the only area of the federal budget that can tell that story. In addition to that, last year, we actually produced $6 billion in savings back to the federal treasury through the renegotiation of the SRA. This was a cut out of crop insurance. Prior to that, in the 08 Farm Bill, the farm programs and crop insurance, actually gave $6.4 billion back to offset other spending increases in the Farm Bill. So the farm programs took an additional $6.4 billion in cuts there. Prior to that, in the 05 Reconciliation Bill, Ag gave up $2.5 billion. So all told, about $15 billion in savings in addition to the nominal reductions that we've seen in the cost of farm programs. Like I said, that's a remarkable story. It's a unique story. And thankfully, our leaders on Capitol Hill are proud to stand up and say it. Nevertheless, there will still be pressure, will there not? Every area of the federal government needs scrutiny, quite frankly, because we have to somehow address this deficit situation for the macroeconomic good of our nation. Point being, budget is going to play a major impact in where we go with the Farm Bill in the future. There's a lot of talk about, you know, the last few weeks we've been reading a lot about these CRs and whether we're going to get $60 billion in additional cuts. All that is kind of window dressing and just a prelude to the bigger fights that are coming ahead of us. Sarah mentioned the possibility of reconciliation. There are also possibilities of just a more unorthodox process, but some way, somehow, the government is feeling the political pressure to actually address these budget needs. You probably saw President Obama yesterday appointed Joe Biden as vice president to get the administration right into the fray of this argument, trying to engage the Congress and saying we have to somehow rein spending in. So it's going to be a major factor. Second, the second factor that I think is really going to define our farm bill debate over the next couple years is simply a recognition among the farm groups that the current safety net is really just not adequate if prices decline. I mean, how many of y'all feel comfortable with the current safety net as it is if prices decline even marginally, say 20, 30%, 40%? I'm seeing heads nodding this way. And I think that's a universal recognition among the farm groups. Now, we have kind of this panoply of programs now with direct payments, which are obviously important, and they're something that you can bank on, and they're WTO compliant. There's a lot of good there. There's the countercyclical payments, which are all but irrelevant. They still maintain a very small baseline in the CBO, but how many of y'all have even thought about a countercyclical payment based on the target price? The only commodity recently that has had that is cotton, and of course, now we see $2 cotton prices. And so even the cotton farmers are saying, how relevant is this? Along with the traditional countercyclical, you have ACRE, but ACRE has its own set of issues and problems. Certainly a potential there to improve, and a need there to improve it. And we have SURE and crop insurance. So you really have five areas of the safety net that are relevant to us, but none of them are working just perfectly. And certainly, if we were to have a major price decline, I don't think the combination as they currently exist would be adequate going forward. This also, I think, points to why you as farmers are so interested. There, we have, you know, as these farm programs have become less relevant in a lot of ways, probably with the exception of crop insurance and fixed payments, there's been some great successes in the demand-building side of farm policy. Ethanol certainly being the great example. And so it makes us very keen and aware of the need to continue on with good energy incentives, bioenergy incentives, alternative fuel incentives to make our country less dependent on foreign oil and to increase opportunities for you as producers. So all this kind of goes into this whole farm policy mix. But I think that recognition that the basic farm safety net is not much of a safety net anymore is really important and is really going to define the debate going on in the next couple of years. Third, we always have to deal with the political realities of farm policy. And the political reality is that we live in a representative democracy where people are generally represented in the Congress by their mass or by their population. And there just aren't many people involved in agriculture directly anymore. You know, when I started in as a staffer for the U.S. Congress, out of the 435 members of the House, we counted 107 districts that we thought were had significant agricultural economies or interests within their districts. Today, that number is about 75. 75 out of 435. That's a long way from a majority. It means that, as in the past, we have to try and cobble together a pragmatic middle between the Republicans and the Democrats that are interested in and understand the need for farm programs. We also have to build political alliances to try and cobble together the votes to get a farm bill. These three issues are going to make the next farm bill, whenever it takes place, whether this year, next year, a real challenge. And certainly next year is the more likely those two scenarios. So I want to get you three basic recommendations that I'd have, and then Mr. Swanson, we can come up and answer the questions. But here are my recommendations, and this is for producers and for ag industry representatives broadly. One, you know, I think we need to avoid kind of the hand-wringing, and we need to be proud of what it is that you do. And the farm policies that have supported production agriculture for many, many years. We have a tendency in agriculture to want to say, and we'll see it even at this conference over the next 3 days, of, gosh, well, you know, maybe we should give up fixed payments or give up this or that. And I would just urge the crowd to say, whoa. You know, these things have meaning. They're there for a reason. They have helped lead to this great renaissance in agriculture that we've seen over the past 10 years. They're not something that we should just throw over the side voluntarily. We need to strengthen that safety net for the future. And so in the process of trying to negotiate for that, we don't want to give up things too early. Besides that, there's good arguments to support each of these. So first, I think we need to just stand up and defend and be proud of what it is we have in terms of federal policy, whether it be on the energy side or whether it be on the farm policy side. Second, I think we need to be careful not to get in front of our leaders. Because of the political realities, the truth is we in agriculture have to stick together. Between commodities, between regions, we simply can't afford to have the fights that we've had in the past between the North and the South, or between commodities, because there are so few of us. And so we need to bind together. We need to circle the wagons, if you will, to stand up for agriculture, because it's so important. It's so important to our nation. It's so important to our world. In that vein, we have some great leaders. Sarah flashed their pictures up on the board. Debbie Stabenow, chairman of the Senate Ag Committee. Pat Roberts, longtime friend. Great, stalwart, stubborn advocate for agriculture, senator from Kansas, as a ranking minority member on the Senate Ag Committee. Frank Lucas from Oklahoma, chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, backed by the ever energetic and hyperactive the Leanne Lust of the U.S. Congress, Colin Peterson, as the ranking member on the House Ag Committee. I mean, these are great champions, and I'm just going to read you some quotes. And here's what I would urge you. Let's not get in front of them. Let's follow their lead. So, Pat Roberts, here he is. Production agriculture faces a serious challenge. Doubling output over the next 40 years to meet global hunger demands. I look forward to being a champion for those who feed a troubled and hungry world. That's you guys. Man, what a great statement from one of our leaders. His priorities, maintaining the safety net. He's not shy about it. You know, I get really frustrated when I hear farm groups or farmers say, boy, these programs are indefensible. Don't tell that to Pat Roberts. He's out there defending it, and he's proud to do it. Second, expanding trade opportunities. Third, conducting oversight on regulations to maintain your competitiveness. So let's not get in front of the leaders. Debbie Stabenow, here's her quote from her great opening speech to the Michigan Agribusiness Club. This is why one of the first principles we need to address for this farm bill is creating the most effective safety net and the best tools for managing risks. She's there. She's in your court. Frank Lucas, here's one that might be a little bit controversial. Frank Lucas, I've always been a proponent of direct payments. Since we've joined the WTO, it comes down to the question of whether our farm programs are compliant. direct payments are the most compliant, the least trade distorting. Frank Lucas supports direct payments. He's proud to stand up and defend them. So we shouldn't be out there saying they're indefendable. And just on the direct payments. Now, I love foreign policy, and I love debating it. And there will be a lot of discussions within the National Sorghum Producers and other organizations over the next 6 months, year, about which direction to go. But there's a lot, and fixed payments get thrown under the bus a lot. But I'm here to say, in terms of relevance to the banker and in terms of flexibility for the farmer, there's a lot to be said for them, in addition to the fact that they're green box in the WTO. And they're the only form of support that is green box. But, there's talk once in a while about, could we move fixed payments into crop insurance? Well, the great thing about fixed payments is you as a producer have that choice. If you want to spend that money on crop insurance, God bless you. You can do it. If that's the most relevant risk management tool, the most relevant safety net for your operation. Alternatively, if you want to use that money to buy more equipment so you can get that crop in and out of the field faster, that's your choice. That is a tailored safety net if I ever saw one. The only point I want to make is Frank Lucas, our chairman, certainly Pat Roberts you could put in this category too. They're happy to defend fixed payments. We certainly shouldn't be out there saying that they're non-defendable or sacrificing them too early. Lastly, and this is a great quote from Peterson, and it kind of goes back to the budget argument, I won't let agriculture be singled out. Everything needs to be on the table. We already made significant cuts for the Farm Bill process itself. And then with the SRA process, that was done in May. If every other government program were reduced the same as agriculture, it would reduce the deficit by $2.3 trillion over the next 10 years. That's Peterson. He's standing up and saying agriculture shouldn't be singled out. We've done our part, kind of along the lines of the stats that I gave you earlier. We've done our part. Why don't we just have other areas of the federal government do what agriculture has done? I think in those quotes we see some great leadership on Capitol Hill, and I think we owe it to those leaders to get behind them, to support their efforts, to be proponents for agriculture along with them, because what you do is important. Sarah did a great job early in her presentation of saying, the world's production is going to have to double in the next couple of decades. That's absolutely right. With growing populations and with growing economies, where the individuals in those growing populations are consuming more, the belief is that we are going to have to double production. That doesn't happen easily. It reminds me, it brings me back to my third point. So, avoid hand-wringing and be proud of what we do. Don't get in front of our leaders and support their efforts. Third, simply do your work because it's important. There's a great quote from Jonathan Swift who wrote Gulliver's Travels. He said, "The man who can make 2 ears of corn or 2 blades of grass to grow on the spot of ground where one grew before would deserve greater of mankind and do a greater service to mankind than the entire race of politicians put all together." Isn't that true? What you do is important for a growing world. And the government needs to be there to provide stability so that you can plan and invest to have the productivity gains that are going to be needed and that are going to be a model for the rest of farmers and the rest of the world so that we can meet these growing demands.